So faith, that's our topic today as we look at Hebrews chapter 11. And faith is a big topic, really. A lot bigger than we could just cover in one morning. You can read all sorts of quotes about faith. Faith, if you have it as small as the mustard seed, you'll be able to move mountains. Or people ask, what faith are you? You just have to believe or trust and have faith. It is a huge topic. We're going to narrow in on to Hebrews 11, and that's a big topic in itself. But I pray that as we look through these different characters in this book, that God will just help us to understand who He is more. And Hebrews 11 is the Hall of Fame. Now, I love reading inspirational stories. You watch a good movie or you read a story about someone who's made it into the Hall of Fame, and wow, it can almost inspire you enough to go stand in left field for a couple hours with the glove on your hand. But inspirational stories, they'll get you to do things you normally wouldn't want to do, and they'll challenge you to new heights and to carry on and to persevere. They're also instructional. Because you look at all the different guys in the Hall of Fame and you're like, what is it about these guys that made them excel and succeed to be able to be honored in that way? And so as we look at Hebrews chapter 11, it's the Hall of Fame, and the common denominator between all of these guys is faith. And we're going to see, I pray that we'll be inspired and we'll be instructed in our own faith this morning. Let's read the first six verses together. We'll kind of take it section by section. Now, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks, even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it's impossible to please God. Because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. So a couple of elements right off the bat in verse 1 of what's involved in faith. Being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we don't see. Now when it says being sure of what we hope for, that's different than, I sure hope I win the lottery. Just kind of a random gamble. What we hope for, that's what we're depending upon. We have to have it. That's what we are depending upon. And when we're sure of it, it's that firm foundation. And certain of what we do not see, that's right away illustrated in his first example where he says, by faith, we understand the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. So by faith, we understand that God exists, that God was all-powerful, almighty, that he existed, and he took nothing and he spoke and it became something. We don't see that, we don't understand that, but by faith we can say, well, if God is God, I can buy that he could create, he could just speak and boom, there's the planets and the stars and the galaxies and all the little molecules. And so it's by faith that we're certain of the unseen. There's a couple of characters right off the bat, and throughout Hebrews 11 in this Hall of Fame of faith, there's all sorts of characters. Now, I don't watch a lot of sports, and so I don't know who all the different characters are. And so I was Googling around to try and find some great Hall of Fame kind of story for us. And I'm looking at all these guys, and it's just names. They don't mean anything to me because I don't know their characters, and I don't know where they've come from and what they're doing. And I could have gone and done the research and actually read the articles about them, but I didn't recognize their names, so I just kind of skipped it over. And as we go through this chapter, there's going to be a lot of names. And some of them we might be familiar with, and we might be like, oh, I know that story. This is what happened there. And others might just be like, whew. And so for those guys, I encourage you to go home, Google them, figure out what part of the Bible they're in, and read up on them. Get to know some of these guys and figure out who they are. The first two characters are Abel and Enoch. And both of them pleased God, and both of them lived by faith. Now, one of them, Enoch, we don't know an awful lot about him. Just a few verses in the Old Testament that tell us Enoch walked with God, and he pleased God, and then God took him and spared him from death. So by faith, he was spared from death. He pleased God. And then we have Abel. He offered God an offering, and God was pleased with that sacrifice, and so God accepted Abel. His brother Cain, on the other hand, looked on at Abel and says, I'm jealous of that guy. How come God accepts him and he doesn't accept me? So what do you do when you're jealous of someone? Take out the competition. So he goes and he kills his brother. Not the best choice, because he was wanting to be accepted by God, and of course that's not the route to do it. But Abel, he lived by faith. He pleased God. And the result? He was killed. So two different characters, both living by faith, both pleasing God. One of them was spared and brought to life, and the other was killed. The goal of faith isn't just success and victory, just so we can achieve things right now and say, yes, I've done it, I'm an overcomer and I'm a victor. The goal of faith is pleasing God. And that's what it tells us in verse 6. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. And why is it that faith pleases God? Like, why not something else? Why isn't he pleased with the proud? Like someone who's like, I'm a self-made man, I can accomplish things, I don't need your help, I don't need a crutch, I can just take who I am and I can make myself in something. Like, why doesn't that please God? The Bible says God opposes the proud. But the faith, he's pleased with them. There's a couple of elements in verse 6. And we'll see that anyone who comes to him, just back up one slide. Yeah, anyone that comes to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. That's what it says right here in verse 6. And so God is pleased with faith, first of all, because when we come to God, we're acknowledging, I believe he exists. And that's crucial, because God, he never came into being and he's never going to go out of being. He's not becoming or growing or changing. God exists and he exists absolutely. He's all powerful, he's all wise, he's all good, he's just all sufficient in himself. And so when God is pleased, when the absolute existence is known and it's embraced in our lives, he's pleased when what he is reflected in our lives. And so as we come to God acknowledging he is God, and that's reflected in our lives, God's pleased with that. And not only is he pleased with that, but he's pleased when we come to him as the rewarder. And because God is so all-sufficient in himself, he just overflows his goodness. And so rather than needing our service where he's a God saying, you have to give me these sacrifices and do this and serve me and to feed him somehow, no, God's all-sufficient in himself. He doesn't need our service. Rather, he's an endless spring, overflowing with life, with joy, with satisfaction, with beauty, with goodness, with power. And so it pleases God when we come to him in such a way that affirms and delights in him being the rewarder. Now, often when we come to God and we think, well, if I come to God as the rewarder, aren't my motives mixed up? Like, if you give something to somebody and you help them out and then they reward you, kind of takes away the joy of just giving, right? And you're like, well, was I doing it for the reward or was I just doing it to help them? And sometimes we get mixed up in our view of God. And yet, all through the Bible, God's putting motivation of reward in front of us, of treasures in heaven and coming to him as the rewarder. Think of a little child, how dependent they are upon their parents and how beautiful that is. Imagine a little child who's like, I don't need any of your help. I can do this all on my own. And they just stubbornly refuse all the good things their parents have for them. And they're like, I don't need any of that. They're thinking their parents have an evil intent of somehow. But if they can say, no, my parents are good, and we can accept the goodness that our parents want to give, it's a beautiful thing. And with God, when we see that he's all sufficient and he exists, and out of his existence just overflows his goodness as the rewarder, and we come to him and our lives delight in God as a rewarder, and that affects how we live and how we trust him, God's pleased with that. And he says, that is amazing. And so, faith isn't the end. It's only a means to the end. And so, we want to switch this slide around. Instead of faith being in the middle, we want to see God in the middle, because faith leads us to God. And God is the end. Faith is only a means to the end. And as we have faith, believing that God exists, believing that God rewards, that's who He is and what He does, God is pleased with that. And so, there's a number of examples of how this takes place, because God, He just loves to pour Himself out in us, and He loves to transform our lives. And faith isn't just an intellectual assent, it actually affects our whole life of who we are and how we function. And so, there's a number of examples of this happening. And this verse 6, it really corresponds to verse 1. And so in verse 1, it tells us that God exists and God rewards. And that shows us kind of like how in God exists, we're certain of things unseen. And God rewards, we're sure of what we hope for. And so coming up, we're going to see some examples. And these examples are all moving between Noah and Abraham, moving towards their delight in God by desiring Him. And they're seeking after God because they desire Him. So let's read Noah, verse 7. Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. By his faith, he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. So Noah was warned about things not seen. God said, Noah, the state of this earth, with everyone having their thoughts on wickedness all the time, I'm sending a flood to destroy the world. So build an ark. Noah was warned about things not seen. There's no certainty there. But through faith, he was certain of what was unseen. By faith, he was certain that God exists, and because he exists, he's going to do what he says he's going to do. And so he did exactly as God commanded. The thing about faith is it's more than just an intellectual mind game. It's not just kind of this aura that we have out there of, I believe in God and that's good enough. Faith changes our lives and how we live. Imagine Noah, if God said, Noah, I'm going to destroy this world, build this ark, and Noah's like, oh, wow. Hey, guess what, everyone? God just told me that He's angry with this world. We've got to change our ways. We've got to stop sinning. In fact, God's even going to send this flood. But an ark, really? It's going to take decades to build. So he strings together a little raft. What's going to happen? The raft's not going to cut it when the floods come. Did Noah believe God in that hypothetical example? Not at all. He acknowledged that God exists. He acknowledged that what God has said is going to happen. He's even like, oh, I better do something about it. I better make this raft. But what good is a raft when the floods are coming? Faith leads him to obey and to build the ark. The same with Abraham in verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he'd later receive as an inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Abraham, he was living in his country with his family and his ancestors, and God said, leave all of that behind, go to this place that I'll show you, I'll give it all to you as an inheritance. Abraham was called to go into the unknown. There was no certainty at all for him there, but through faith, he was certain of the unseen. He knew that God existed, and because God existed, he'd reward. God says, I'll give all of that to you as an inheritance. So he says, if God's the rewarder, I'll leave all that behind. He obeyed, and he went. Now, let's just say Abraham, God spoke to him and says, I'm going to give all that to you as an inheritance. Go. Live there. And then he walked around his own country and he didn't leave because it's pretty comfortable in his own country, you know. And he's got his house and all his family and his relatives and everything else. And he keeps telling them, God's going to give me this inheritance out there somewhere. I don't know where. And he didn't leave. That's not faith, is it? Yeah, it's saying I believe in God. Even in his heart, he's like, I affirm that God is there. But faith means he obeyed and he went. He followed the way, the path that God gave him. Then it carries on, and in verse 9 it says, by faith he made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So there's Abraham, promised this massive inheritance, and he's living as a stranger in a foreign land in tents. How does that work? He was so certain that God exists and God rewards that he says, I can put up with living in a tent because I know that one day God's going to fulfill his promise. And he was looking ahead to something beyond. He's like, God's going to build me a city because he's the one. And it carries on where by faith Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. God had promised Abraham many descendants, except there's Abraham, he's old. His wife is old. She's barren. They can't have kids. How's this promise going to be fulfilled? And then God says, Abraham, come on outside. Abraham goes outside and he says, look up at the stars. Try and count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he starts getting mixed up already because there's too many. I can't even count this lights in here. But you get confused. And God's like, Abraham, just like you can't count the stars, they're too numerous to count, I'm going to give you that many descendants. And Abraham believed God. He considered him faithful. And because he just acknowledged, okay, if God said, and God is, he's there, he exists, and he rewards, and so, it's going to happen. He considered him faithful, and then boom, God gave him all of that. Then we come to verse 13 to 16, which is a bit of a summary here. And it tells us all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. It says all of these people were still living by faith when they died. And faith doesn't just have a season. Oh, I've got this certain trial, and during that trial is the season to express your faith. And once the trial is done, your faith has expired, it's done its job, and now you can just go on living. It's not how faith works. All these people were living by faith when they died. It carries on. We persevere in it through the trials and through the easy times in each season of life. And then what was the result of their faith? They did not receive the things promised. Did you get that? They had faith, but they didn't receive the things promised. They saw them and they welcomed them from a distance. They were looking forward. They were looking past this life to beyond. It's a little bit different than how we often view life, isn't it? We're like, come on, God. I prayed to you this morning and you still haven't answered me. What's going on? Are you there? Am I talking to a brick wall? Like, what's happening? We assume, well, I trusted God in that moment when I prayed. But faith means we continue trusting. We don't see, we continue persevering. We don't receive, we continue looking forward. And these guys continue to look forward. And you can see how key it is that this was an encouragement to the Hebrew Christians that this book was written to. They were tempted to just push off Jesus and all that he was for them and just go back to their old life. And here's guys that carried on right to the end, always persevering, and yet they didn't receive it. They were looking forward to a heavenly country. That's key because God is ultimate. He's at the center of our faith. And so he's the rewarder. What's the best reward that God can give you? To fulfill his promises? That's the reward he gives. But the best reward the rewarder can give is his very self. And so God promises for them to be with him forever. And God as a rewarder is always going to be faithful. He will never let us down. We have to remember this world isn't our home. This isn't where we belong. We also are strangers and foreigners here. We've been adopted into God's family. We're part of God's kingdom. And so we're strangers. How do strangers live? Verse 13 and 14, it says, they admitted they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show they're looking for a country on their own. They're looking for another country. They're searching after it. They're seeking it. And then in verse 16, they were longing for a better country. a heavenly one. They're longing for it. They were craving it. They desired it. And so they had these desires, and that desire caused them to seek after it. And that's a key element of faith, where faith is displaying that God exists. He is there. He is ultimate. He is absolute. And because he's absolute, our lives need to reflect that by trusting in him and that he's the rewarder. And so, as we come to him as a rewarder, we set our desires on him. Because there's so many desires in this world that we need to set our desire on what is best, on what is ultimate, and not get sidetracked by secondary desires or temporary desires, but to set our desires on what is best. And we always seek after what we desire. So there's strangers living in a foreign land. Have you ever been away from home? You start missing home. Homesickness, they call it. It's kind of, home is pretty nice, and I miss it, and all the familiarities and securities and the people and the food and everything else. As strangers in this world, we're homesick. We're homesick for heaven. And just like in Romans chapter 8, it tells us all of creation groans, waiting for the restoration of all things, because this world isn't as it should be. This world's broken and fallen apart from sin, and it's wanting to get restored. So in our very lives, all our different cravings, there's because we're homesick. And so we don't want to just satisfy them with temporary means. What's the craving we most often have? The grumbling stomach, right? You're getting hungry. You're like, oh, I'm really hungry and I'm craving some food right now. And as we have those cravings, it reminds us, oh, I need something to fill me up. I need something to satisfy me. But when we choose to fast, when we choose to go without food for a certain period of time, we're fast because we're seeking after God and after his kingdom, after what's best. Our stomach keeps reminding us, you're hungry, you're craving something. And we say no to food because we're saying, I'm spending time in the presence of God through prayer and through fasting. It's the same with different cravings we have. You go to work and you're frustrated there. It's Monday, but oh, I wish it was Friday. Because we're frustrated in this world because we're homesick. We're longing for something better. And as we recognize the things that aren't working well in this life, it's because we don't belong here. We're looking for the restoration of all things. And so as we recognize that, it helps us and it carries us along. And so the desires lead to what we seek after. And God is pleased with that. God is pleased, he says in verse 16, God's not ashamed to be called their God, for he's prepared a city for them. So in verse 6, we see without faith, it's impossible to please God. And now with faith, as we desire him, as we long for him, and then we seek after him, God's not ashamed to be called their God. Can you imagine that? Where God looks at you and he says, I'm not ashamed of you. You have faith in me. You've trusted in me. What a beautiful and amazing thing. And so, it carries on with some examples of this. Because in our own lives, we know, how does this work itself out? So we can see these things, but in the moment, when you're going through something, whether it's a good thing and you just get distracted with all the goodness of life, or whether it's a hard thing and you're down and you need to persevere, how does it work out? Let's read some of the examples here. It carries on with Abraham, and it says, by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from death. Abraham had faith. We've just read all different encounters of the faith that Abraham had, and then God came through as a rewarder and gave him the son. He gave him that promised son, the reward. Now, is Abraham going to look to that reward and say, that's what I'm clinging to? Or is he going to continue to have his faith in the rewarder? The test is there. Abraham gave up his own son. Now, God, in his mercy, gave him a substitute in his place. But here's Abraham. He reckoned that God could even raise the dead. There's a few more verses about guys blessing their sons, looking forward to a future and blessings that they will have. And then it comes to some of my favorite verses in this chapter about Moses. Verse talks about Moses' parents in faith, they hid him. And then in verse 24 it says, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be known as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. So here's Moses. He's been adopted by the daughter of Pharaoh, the king of all of Egypt. Can you imagine that position? The prestige, the power that is there. I am the son of Pharaoh's daughter, and you've got access to all of that power living in the palace. And Moses refused it. He pushed it all aside. He gave it up. How on earth could you do that? Like, aren't people trying to climb the ladder? And here Moses, he's climbing down the ladder. He had his desire set on something better. Moses knew that God is great. Yeah, Pharaoh is pretty great, but God is great. And so I don't have to seek after the control and the prestige of the palace and that Pharaoh has. He had his eyes set on something better. He desired something better, and so he sought after it. And in seeking after what was better, he was pushing aside, he was refusing the control and the power and the prestige that came with being living in the palace. Then in verse 25, Moses chose to be mistreated along with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a short time. The pleasures of sin. And all the palace life had to offer Moses, he could have had anything that he wanted. All that satisfaction. We desire satisfaction, don't we? That's like the Canadian dream. As long as you're happy, right? It doesn't matter what you're doing, as long as you're happy. We desire satisfaction. And sin brings about pleasure. Sin brings about a lot of pleasure. It says for a short time, because in the end, sin always leads to enslavement and death. But in the short time, it brings about a lot of pleasure and satisfaction. And Moses says, no thank you to all of that satisfaction the pleasures of sin can bring. And in place of that, he says, I'll trade it to be mistreated along with God's people. Wow. How on earth can you say pleasure or mistreatment? I'll choose the mistreatment. It's because he desired what was better. He had a clear view in his mind that God exists and God rewards, and I desire what's best. Pleasures of sin, yeah, that's good, but it's not best. And so I'm going to push that aside. I'll even walk into mistreatment along with God's people because God is best. And if I want to be satisfied, where's my satisfaction going to be found? I believe that God is good and that he satisfies, so I don't have to look for satisfaction anywhere else. Verse 26. Moses regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ as of greater value than the treasures of Egypt because he was looking ahead to his reward. All the treasures of Egypt, and he took disgrace instead. The same trade-up. Here he could have had all the security of the treasure. Treasure brings about that certain, yeah, I can do anything I want, I'm safe, I'm secure in all of this. And yet he chose disgrace. And in his disgrace, he didn't have to try and prove himself because God's gracious. So I don't have to prove myself because God's the one proving me on his behalf through Jesus. And he carries on and it says, by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the king's anger. He persevered because he saw him who is invisible. He didn't fear the king. Rather than looking for the acceptance of the king, he says, I'm not going to fear that. I'm going to go my way and follow God because God is more glorious than the king. So why fear the king? My acceptance is going to be found in the one who's most glorious. Do you see how our desires, as they're set towards what is ultimate, carry us through even into some difficult times of saying, I'll choose the hard path because my desire is on something even better. And in chapter 12, we read how Jesus, who for the joy set before him, endured the cross because his desire was what was on best. So he went through the cross with joy because he knew that was best. And Moses, do you think he was always thinking, oh, I love this path that I followed, the mistreatment, the disgrace, the hardships, all of that? It's not like he felt like it, but he desired what was best. And as he desired what was best, he says, I'm seeking after that, even if it means going through these hard times, even if it means being rejected by the world around me. The Hall of Fame continues. And in it, we see some pretty triumphant victories. By faith, Moses kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood so the destroyer of the firstborn would not touch the firstborn of Israel. By faith, the people passed through the Red Sea as on dry land. But when the Egyptians tried to do so, they were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell after the people had marched around them for 7 days. By faith, the prostitute Rahab Because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. And what more shall I say? I don't have time to tell about Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, who became powerful in battle, routed foreign armies, women received back from their dead, raised to life again. The triumphant victory of faith. And the encouragement that this would have been to the early believers to say, yes, through faith, we know that God exists and God rewards. We can see how God has demonstrated the amazing victories that came about. But just like in the beginning of the chapter where we had Abel who was killed for his faith and Enoch who was spared, his life was spared because of the same faith. It's not about the victory. It's about the direction of our faith being in God. Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging. Still others were chained, put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskin and goatskin, destitute, persecuted, mistreated. The world wasn't worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Faith led some to some pretty triumphant, amazing victories. And faith, the same faith and the same God, led others through and into some very difficult hardships, even death. Faith isn't the end in itself. Its goal is God and pleasing Him. And all of these, in verse 39, says they were all commended for their faith. God was pleased with them. And then we see the next verse. The startling, and it makes us think beyond just who these guys are to where we're at today. It says, all of these were commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that together with us, those guys would be made perfect. All of these guys were walking by faith and it pleased God, yet none of them received the promises. Wow. Now some of them, they shut the mouths of lions, they escaped from the edge of the sword, they quenched the fiery flames, but even that wasn't the fulfillment of the promise. God had planned something better than winning the battles. God had planned something better than sitting in a den with lions and not being eaten. God had planned something better than in a fiery furnace and not even smelling like smoke when you come out. What is this something better that God had promised? Because these guys didn't receive the promise of God. It says God's promise, it's for us. And then together with us, those guys in the Old Testament, they'd be made perfect. The whole book of Hebrews is pointing to the superiority of Jesus. It's elevating Him to be ultimate. And it would be easy to read this chapter, chapter 11, and it would be easy to say, well, as long as we have a generic belief in God that He exists and He rewards, so let's desire Him because He's best, that's good enough. But that's not the promise. God's got something even better. That's the foundation and the core of faith, but what's even better is the specific promise of God, namely Jesus. The whole book of Hebrews is saying there's a promise coming. All of these guys in the Old Testament, they saw Jesus and they welcomed Him from a distance, but they didn't get Him because He hadn't come yet. So we don't want to fall into the trap and just read through chapter 11 and say, let's just have a generic faith in God. And as long as we believe in God, that's good enough. Because doesn't the Bible tell us the Jews, they believe in God? And yet they've stumbled over the stumbling stone of the law. They don't have Jesus. And so that faith in God would just be like Noah building, stringing together his little raft. It's not adequate. They've got all the building blocks of faith, but But they're not receiving the promise of God, which comes through Jesus. Or Muslims can preach the message of Hebrews 11 in the mosque and say, we need to believe in God because He exists and He rewards, so let's desire Him and seek after Him. But that's no different than our Christian faith. Until we come to verse 39 and 40 where it says, God has something even better for us. The whole book of Hebrews is saying Jesus is superior. He's superior to the angels. Jesus is better than Moses. Jesus is the better law. He is the better sacrifice. He is the better priesthood. And because Jesus is ultimate, and Pastor Don has led us through this week after week, just elevating Jesus and who He is. And all of these guys in the Old Testament, they saw Jesus. They looked forward to Him. And so their faith carried them through to persevere through all of these different circumstances. But they didn't receive it because Jesus hadn't yet come. But now Jesus has come. And now we have received the promises. These guys, they were commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. And now here, we have received what has been promised. Jesus has come. He is the better law, the better sacrifice, and He is here. And so, Jesus in the Old Testament hadn't yet come. They had to wait. But now Jesus is here, and so our faith is in a very specific person. Through the very specific event in history where Jesus was the better sacrifice on the heavenly altar as the high priest. The Old Testament faith was faith in a future promise of God. And now our faith is in the past act of God. It's a promise fulfilled. None of them in the past had received the promise, but now we're receiving it. We have it. And then together with those guys, it says together with us, we're being made perfect. Because Jesus is the only way to be perfect. And without being perfect, we can't be with God. And so our faith is very rooted in the past. But it also has the present and a future element to it. Because in the past, Jesus came and He saved us from the penalty of sin. So now we're secure. We can draw near to God. We can come to Him, and all our faith is secure because in the past Jesus has saved us from the penalty of sin. In the present, we're being saved from the power of sin, where Jesus helps us overcome through His blood so that we can say no to ungodliness and worldly passions. And in the future, we're going to be saved from the very presence of sin. That's what we look forward to. That's what we groan for and long for. That's where our craving is when sin is dealt with and we're saved from the very presence of sin. So we've been saved from the penalty of sin. We are being saved from the power of sin. We will be saved from the presence of sin. And so through faith, we carry on and we persevere. And next Sunday, Pastor Don's going to preach on chapter 12. But it's impossible to read chapter 11 without going into the first few verses of chapter 12. Because that's the whole application and conclusion of what's happening. Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, all those guys in the Hall of Fame, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let's run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus because He's the author of our faith. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus because He's the perfecter of our faith. And Jesus, who for the joy set before Him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God, consider Him who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. It's a call to persevere in our faith. To look to God because He exists, and to look to God because He rewards, and the reward He has is in the specific promise of Jesus. So let's desire Him and seek after Him because our promise is secure. It's been fulfilled in Jesus.